do some damage, shall we?"
The other paladins retrieved their weapons and fell into line. All knew what they faced, but the expressions of anticipation were universal. It was hard to feel fear when you had such power. He nodded to the other paladins, which Winter had assigned him to lead.
"The paladin can only take so much damage," he said. "So make it count. The titans are our principal targets, and it will take all of us to destroy one. If we survive the first wave, we'll face the Verinai."
The demon dwarf spun his fire hammer, which seemed tiny in his huge hands.
"We know what to do," he said irritably. "When do we get to fight?"
There was a chorus of agreement, and Turon grinned.
"Let them come to us. When the titans get trapped in the city, we strike."
They nodded, and he led the way through the open gates. He had to duck under the opening and then entered the treacherous ground of the city. Threading his way around the multitude of hidden traps, he turned west. Then he caught the roof of an inn that had miraculously survived the tower's fall. His hand dug through the wood, snapping beams like twigs as he scaled the roof. With one foot through a hole in the roof and the other atop, he gazed west, where the Empire's army approached. The four titans led the advance, their feet plunging into the earth. At 50 feet tall, they were enormous, their bodies threaded with all 12 of the common magics. Their light rivaled the setting sun, a sinister reminder of the Verinai's power. Behind them came the Verinai. Nearly the whole of the guild was present, each armed and armored for battle. They strode with their heads high, their expressions smug. Fire blossomed on shields and spears, blades and armor. Entities of every type walked among them, an army of creatures bent on destruction. The Verinai's passage killed the vegetation, leaving ashes in their wake. The Empire loyalists and single-talent mages comprised the third wave. No less armored, they had chosen to follow Tyria of their own volition, and they marched with the confidence of victory. Bringing up the rear, the remainder of the rebellion marched, their position as reserve obvious. Many were in shackles and chained together like slaves. They vacillated between shouting at the rebellion and spewing hatred at the Empire. 100,000 strong, the army filled the landscape, eliciting growls and curses from the meager defenders. Winter ascended to the roof beside Turon and raised her voice to the Western Command.
"Take down the Titans," she called. "Then the Verinai. Hopefully everyone else will surrender."
"If we survive that long," a gnome said.
The Empire army split up as it approached, the four divisions following the Titans to surround the city. The Empire's tactics were obvious. Surround and crush the city and anyone inside. Turon thought Tyria would seek an opportunity to speak with the Lydian, but noticed a different figure at the head of the army.
"Elsin."
He spit her name. Fire brightened on his sword, reflecting his tightening grip. The guildmaster of the Verinai rode a giant reaver of white light, her gauntlets visible even from Turon's position. She came to a halt out of arrow range and called orders to the Empire army.
"Doesn't look like they want to talk,"
Galathon said, as the Titans lumbered towards the city.
"Get ready,"
Turon said, dropping from the roof and retreating back into the city. Taking up position behind a maze of pitfalls, they watched the demonic titan advance towards them. It flexed its huge arms and strained against the host of enchanted leashes. Its roar shook the ground and sent birds in the elven forests flocking into the sky, their cries of alarm echoing across the battlefield.
"Galathon," Turon said, "go for the right wing. I'll take the left. The moment it steps into a trap, we strike together."
As if anticipating the pitfalls, the demon snarled and spread its wings. Fashioned of air, the wings beat upon the ground as the demon reached the city wall. Great gusts filled the streets of the city and sent dust swirling in miniature tornadoes. Then it rose into the air.
"The traps will be useless,"
the demon dwarf growled. The demon rose high and then dropped, banking over the city and unleashing a barrage of dragon's fire from its jaws. The fire engulfed a trio of structures and spilled into the street next to Toron. He ducked away and watched it soar by. "We have to get it on the ground," Winter said. "Toron, draw it to the Dawn's Keep Tower. If it follows you inside," Toron smiled in anticipation, "its wings will be useless." Toron turned and sprinted through the buildings, dodging pitfalls. Springing off a fallen inn, he caught the battlements and threw himself over, landing on the ground next to a section of broken wall. The dwarves had laid a trap using the chains from the broken portcullis. Toron kicked a stone onto the trap, causing it to trigger. The street opened up and the ground snapped shut, revealing the chains. Toron reached down and yanked them free.
"Are you mad?" the demon dwarf bellowed from nearby. "I need a leash," he said.
Coiling the large chain around his arm, he watched the demon titan banking for the other paladins in his command. They launched boulders, while the mages and crossbowmen sent their own missiles into the sky. The barrage caused it to veer towards Toron, and he stepped into the open. Drawing his sword with his free hand, he activated the fire and roared at the titan. It spotted Toron and folded its wings, diving to him. Toron whirled and sprinted down the street. He ran faster than a horse, his great legs pumping as he leapt a weakened section of the street and landed in a dead run. The demon cut off its fire to roar. Then it dropped closer, its claws reaching for Toron. Toron raced for the fallen fortress. Halfway along its length, a great gash split the tower, the opening large enough for even the titan. Much of the interior had crumbled when the tower had struck the ground, leaving piles of rubble and heaps of twisted metal. Books, broken furniture, and shredded tapestries added to the mess. Shards of aqua glass littered the area, making passage precarious. Toron uncoiled the chain and formed a loop on the end. Just as he passed through the opening, he tossed it into the air. The demon titan was nearly upon him and the chain flew around its neck. Toron dived to the side as the demon's claws snapped upon his shadow. Like a rider pulling on the reins, Toron yanked on the chain, bringing the titan to the ground. Bellowing its surprise and fury, the titan crashed inside the Oracle Tower, sending rubble and metal clattering against the tower wall. The titan slid across what had once been the library of the huge tower and collided with the opposite side. Toron was dragged across the turret and bounced over the rubble, the impact dislodging the armor on his shin. His paladin received the damage as his mind spun. The demon titan twisted and rose, spreading its wings to roar at Toron. Toron shoved a fist into the rubble and rolled to his feet. Then he darted forward and used a fallen bookcase as a springboard. Spinning his sword, he plunged his blade into the demon's knee. The beast swung its claw, striking him and dislodging the sword. Toron tumbled away, crashing through a wall and coming to a halt in a fireplace. The beast roared and took a step towards him, but the chain around its neck caught on a pillar, causing it to trip onto the mangled remains of a spiral staircase. The staircase was little more than steel spikes, and they dug into the beast's side and back, cutting one wing all the way to the joint. Toron's vision spun from the fall, but the paladin had taken the damage, and he rose to find the beast flailing in the rubble, trying to regain its footing. The impact had ripped Toron's sword from his fingers. Following the clink as it skittered away, Toron dove for his blade and scooped it up, turning as the demon righted itself and rose to its full stature to release a titanic roar. Toron darted away from the ensuing dragon's fire and used the chamber to his advantage. The piles of rubble were unstable, making the demon's footing weak and uncertain, but they provided refuge for Toron, and he leapt from one to another. The demon tried to take a step, but its foot slipped, and it slid back. Taking advantage of the lapse, Toron slipped to the wall and flanked it, striking at the demon's leg. Liquid magic spilled from the wound as the titan whirled, but Toron had ducked into a surviving room, using a hole in the wall as a door. The tower had become a patchwork of broken rooms. Using the damaged walls like a ladder, he scaled up the corridor as the room below filled with dragonfire, the flames chasing Toron upward. He caught a strong door and ripped it open. Diving inside, he used it to close off the searing heat. Then he spotted another hole and ascended to a higher level. A break in the floor allowed him to peer into the cavern containing the Titan. Like a raccoon digging through a rotting log, the demon clawed at the stone, tearing great chunks of stone free in its effort to find Toron. More fire filled the holes, turning the lower rooms into an inferno. Toron pushed through a smaller opening to what had once been a receiving room. Jumping over a fallen couch, he reached an opening and peered down at the demon Titan. It was just below him, its horns pressed up against an opening as it searched for Toron with its claws. Toron grinned and leaned over the Titan, dropping when the demon bent to the ground. He fell through the opening and landed on the demon's back. He brought his sword down and used the weight of his fall to shear the damaged wing from the demon's body. Its roar was deafening, obscuring the crash as the huge wing landed on the piles of rubble. Bereft of the magic that sealed it, the wing burst like a water bubble, the blast of air sending rocks and Toron tumbling away. With only a single wing, the demon was off balance, and apparently its Varanai masters realized it could not fight in the cramped hall. It leapt to the gash in the turret wall and began to climb out, only to encounter the rest of Toron's command. Led by Winter and Galathon, the other paladins charged the opening. The paladins caught the beast's horns, wing, even its jaws, and forced the Titan to fall back into the library. It landed hard, and all tumbled away except for Galathon. The rock troll had positioned himself to land on the creature's chest. Diving past the snapping jaws, he sliced the demon's throat and landed on the ground. Trapped in the confines of the fallen tower, the demon Titan sought to rise, but the paladins and Galathon attacked on all sides. Its jaws reached out and snapped a paladin, ripping it in half. Then a claw managed to catch another and crushed it into the rubble. Both were destroyed, but the demon could not withstand the assault. With magic spilling from hundreds of wounds, it released a final roar before bursting into sparks of broken magic. His chest heaving from the exertion, Galathon spit on the remains of the demon and spun his axe. Winter stared at the remains before ordering her command back into the city. Toron picked his way through the gap and slid down the rubble to the street. Then he led his paladins back to their position on the West Watch. Winter walked at his side, her expression one of triumph, as she pointed to the three great corpses littering the city. "Look at that," Winter said, pointing to a swath of fire to the east. The inferno was tinged with sparks of different magics, the size suggesting it had come from another Titan. On the opposite side of the city, the body of another Titan seeped into the earth, melting buildings, rocks, and soil. A third was on the ground, while paladins hacked at the giant form. "The Titans have been destroyed," Toron said.
"The Varanai were arrogant," Winter replied. "Alone, the Titans were vulnerable."
Despite her words, Toron noticed that a quarter of the paladins had been destroyed. Shouts rang out as orders came from the Empire army, and thousands of boots began to advance. Toron climbed the outside of the fallen tower and grasped a protruding balcony, using the vantage point to see outside the city.
"The second wave approaches," he called down.
Galathon growled and wiped blood from his face.
"Time for the real fight."
"The Varanai won't be able to avoid the pitfalls," Winter said. "But we need to get back to the Western Watch."
She stabbed a finger to those in her command, and they hurried back to their post. Toron scanned the army for Elsin, spotting the woman shouting and screaming to the Varanai army as she directed them to advance. Toron flashed a savage smile. Pleased they'd managed to incite her to anger. Galathon released a rumbling laugh.
"We took her Titans. Now, let's take her life."
Chapter 44 Elsin. At Elsin's command, the Verinai began their advance. 30,000 strong, the Verinai were further reinforced by entities, sentients, and guardians. Despite their might, there was an aura of hesitation about the advancing battle mages. The sight of their titans being vanquished had shaken them, and a trickle of fear seeped into their pride. "Draw them into the traps," Winter said. The paladins spread out and positioned themselves in streets and alleys, maintaining visibility. The entities did not charge, showing their master's caution as they directed their enchanted servants to enter the demolished city of Horizon. Predators of light, fire, water, and air darted through the fallen gates of the city. Dividing into packs, they began their hunt, their growls and snarls reverberating across the city. Toron watched a wolf guardian stalk the nearest road until it spotted Galathon. The beast was the size of a lion, its massive frame phasing to fire and back again. It growled and charged, the hackles on its neck rising. But the rock troll remained rooted in place and taunted the beast. The giant wolf snarled as it accelerated, streaking down the street as a pack of wolf entities filled its wake. The beast leapt a pile of rubble and landed 10 paces from Galathon, the impact triggering the trapdoor and sending the guardian plummeting onto enchanted spikes. Its snarl turned to pain as the spikes pierced its form, but the beast was made of fire, and it fought to free itself, snapping spikes as it flailed. Galathon dropped into the pit and approached the guardian. Pinned, the beast breathed fire, but the rock troll evaded with ease, and then swung his axe in a great circle, bringing it down upon the guardian's skull. 2 more blows and the fire cooled, the wolf going still. Galathon returned his axe to his back and then ascended to the street. As he did, the rest of the guardian's pack split to either side, avoiding the pit with ease, only to fall into neighboring traps. 2 wolves leapt through a window into a demolished home. They landed on the hidden chains and were yanked through the door into the pit. On the opposite side of the street, another wolf circled the hole in the street, the shape of the ledge, forcing it under an overhang of a roof. The roof collapsed, knocking it into the pit and onto the spikes. The remaining wolves were caught in other traps, all dying before any got close to Galathon. The scene was matched across the entire city of Horizon. The ruins rising to claim the lives of entities and sentients, and even the guardians. Many tried to avoid the streets, but that was a mistake, and buildings collapsed in plumes of dust, crushing the enchanted army. The defenders roared their defiance as dust and magic rose from the ruins of the city.
"You'll have to kill us with your own hands," Galathon bellowed.
The Verinai captain on the western flank scowled and signalled an advance, and the Verinai began to work their way into the city. Stone mages went first, using their magic to identify traps by the shape of the earth. But Princess Aura had anticipated the tactic, and she'd ordered other traps hidden on the approaches. Spikes of light exploded from a wall, killing 2 Verinai as they pointed to a hidden pitfall. The Empire had lost titans and entities, sentients and guardians, but the sight of their own blood being spilt shook them to the core. The rebellion began to shout and smash their weapons against stone walls, the clash reverberating across the city as the small force taunted the Empire. Goaded, the Verinai formed themselves into tight groups of varying magics, each group capable of seeing and stopping every magic. More blood was spilt, but the Verinai finally began to advance, the soldiers triggering traps so those that came behind could pass safely. Many pitfalls remained, but Toron realized that to let the Verinai disarm the city would be a mistake. Apparently realizing the same thing, Astyn and Aura ordered a flag to be raised at Dawn's Keep.
"Time to fight," Winter called, descending from a rooftop.
"About time," the demon dwarf said, spinning his axe so fire erupted on the knobby head.
Winter ordered the paladins and rebellion forces to separate into groups, each with one of Winter's Verinai in their midst. The smaller units spread out to block every approach, barring the way to Dawn's Keep and the precious requiems. Toron raced through an abandoned inn and dived through a window. The opening was too small for the paladin body, and wood and glass rained down upon a scouting party as he rolled to his feet. Unprepared for his appearance, the quartet of mages swiveled to face him, instinctively casting protective magic. But he kept his momentum and twisted, swinging his huge sword in a devastating blow. Half-formed entities crumpled as the flaming sword cut them apart, the length of the sword reaching the first two Verinai. Both folded in half and went down, never to rise again. The remaining two scrambled backward into the demon dwarf's hammer. He crushed them both, and then retreated into the building, and Toron did the same. Again, the Empire ordered scouting parties forward and managed to gain 50 feet before they were crushed from all sides. Their screams echoed back to the Empire army, sending fear into the soldiers. Then Elsin decided on a different tactic and ordered the whole of her army to advance. Toron retreated to an alley where Winter watched the advancing forces. Her expression tightened as she watched the thousands of soldiers charge into the pitfalls, dying by the hundreds. "Elsin cares nothing for their lives," Winter said, her voice stricken.
"We can't let them get to Dawn's Keep," he said.
She nodded, and together they stepped into the street. As darkness fell on horizon, they fought the Verinai, striking at the larger force before retreating deeper into the ruins. For the first time, the rebellion began to suffer losses, the Empire's sheer numbers enough to punch a hole in the rebellion defenses. Toron scowled as he saw one of the paladins get caught in the open. The Verinai pinned him with stone from the street and then struck on all sides, ripping the enchanted armor apart. Although he knew the woman inside was not harmed, Toron winced. A moment later another perished, and then another. The Empire continued to advance, plunging into the city defenses at the cost of lives. Thousands of Verinai perished, but the reckless charge cut deep into the city, some of the approaches coming within 50 feet of the Dawn's Keep walls. Toron fought with every shred of his ingenuity, grateful for Galathon and Winter at his side. The trio was devastating, killing nearly as many as the traps around them. Their unity drew attention, and shortly after the Verinai retreated, a solitary figure appeared in the street. Rising from his latest duel, Toron turned and spotted Elsin striding towards them. Her unhurried pace indicated a supreme confidence. Toron held his breath as she stepped on a trap, but she soared across the pit with ease. A smile appeared on her face as she spotted Galathon with Winter and Toron's paladin.
"Your defiance is futile," she called.
Galathon pointed his axe at the woman.
"Amplius or not, we'll kill you."
She laughed and shook her head.
"You are like insects that sting, and then get crushed for their impudence."
"Elsin," Winter said, "if you don't stop, the Verinai will perish. Just look at how many have died in this city."
"Ah, the traitor," Elsin said, her expression hardening as she looked to Winter. "I think I will enjoy killing you the most."
Elsin gathered lightning into a spear and hurled it at Winter. The woman dived to the side, the bolt impacting a tavern behind her. The detonation brought the roof down, the plume of dust engulfing Toron as he charged. With Galathon on his flank, he closed the gap and swung his sword. A hand of stone exploded from the street and caught his blade. The hand twisted and pulled, sending Toron tumbling away. Tiny compared to the rock troll, Elsin raised her hand and stopped the axe with her bare hands. Her gauntlets glowed as she wrenched the axe from the troll's grip and swung it herself, smashing it into the troll's armor and knocking him into a wall.
"Wonderful weapon," she exclaimed, and then sniffed in disdain. "But a little light for my tastes."
She discarded the axe and turned on Toron. He regained his feet and lunged. Elsin retreated to avoid his sword, but shadows flowed off the blade and turned into a knife. The dark blade flew from the end of the sword and plunged into Elsin's shoulder. She cried out in surprise and pain and yanked the blade from her shoulder.
"Toron," she hissed. "You'll pay for that."
"Not this time," he said, and charged. He drove his sword for her gut. She shifted and caught the spine of the sword as it passed close to her, and the blade morphed into a steel snake that turned on Toron. It snapped at his face, but he tossed it away. She used the moment to channel another lightning strike and aimed it at his chest. Too late to avoid it, Toron charged as the lightning spear struck. His hand closed a hair's breadth from Elsin's throat as the blast knocked him backward, charring a gaping hole in the paladin. He tumbled away, the paladin spinning through a wall and into the building beyond. For an instant his vision flashed to the Requiem, and he feared the paladin had been destroyed. Then his sight returned, and the war machine recovered. Toron groaned as he pulled himself out from under the rubble and pushed a beam out of the way. As he climbed out of the fallen home, he watched Elsin send a tornado charm into Winter. The woman flew 50 feet in the air, her scream echoing over the din of battle. Toron scrambled free and sprinted to her. Reaching a semi-intact structure, he caught the roof and scaled up. Then he sprinted for the edge and leapt, catching Winter before she struck the ground. He landed in the street, cracking the stones and falling to his knee. Gasping for breath, Winter stumbled to the ground.
"I thought I was dead," she breathed.
"I wouldn't let that happen," he said. She grinned and kissed the paladin on the cheek.
"You have my gratitude."
"I'd like the same gratitude when I'm not in a paladin," he said. She smirked.
"As you order."
A rumble of wood and stone signaled Galathon's arrival, and the troll stepped free of the building. His face was a mask of blood and dirt, as was his chest and one arm. His broken armor had been discarded, but his scowl was more anger than pain.
"Elsin is headed to Dawn's Keep."
"Why didn't she kill us?" Winter asked, now back on her feet.
"She's going for the Requiems," Toron realized. "If she can take them down, we'll be helpless."
"She's going alone?" Winter asked.
"Our defenses are mostly in the city," Toron said, gesturing towards the sounds of battle in the darkness. "If she can reach the Requiems, she can destroy our greatest strength with a single blow."
"Not if we kill her first," Galathon rumbled.
Toron spotted his sword, which had returned to being a weapon. As he picked it up, Winter shouted to Loth, ordering him to take her place, commanding the West Watch. Loth's paladin nodded, and he turned to the other surviving paladins, barking orders for them to assemble.
"Watch the flank!" he shouted.
Toron accelerated towards the castle. His suspicions were confirmed when he found the dead rebellion soldiers on the walls. Then he heard shouts of alarm from beneath the fortress, indicating Elsin was already inside.
"She's too strong to kill," Toron said. "We'll have to be smart."
"You have a plan?" Winter asked.
Toron nodded.
"But our timing will have to be flawless."
As he laid out his plan, the others nodded, and they hurried into the fortress. But as Toron descended through the fortress, he frowned. Elsin was clearly leading the army, but a noticeable figure was absent. Where was Taria?
Chapter 45 Battle Mage. Alidian picked her way through the devastated canyon. The last two guardians were of stone, and the two great panthers lay shattered at her feet. Alidian's body burned with fatigue, and she took a moment to survey the city of Verisith. Red and Jester were both in good spirits, even though their paladins had suffered enormous damage. The aquaflesh was rent and cracked, the armor scorched, but they exulted in what it was like to use the war machines in battle. Alidian tried not to listen, the romantic undertones to their conversation sending pains into her chest. A plunging gorge cut through the mountain, its depth steeped in darkness. Alidian had used that very darkness to escape on her last visit.
the failed attempt to prove the Verinai's traitorous schemes. The Verinai had carved a shelf on one side of the canyon, making room for a city. Lit with enchanted lights, the city of Verisith was the heart of the guild, an impenetrable fortress that commoners spoke of with fear. But now it was largely empty. Alidian spotted knots of Verinai in the streets and in the doors to their homes. They were the old and the infirm, the sick and the young, those not deemed capable of fighting for the Empire. The guild had built mighty defences for the city and thought it impregnable. Now Alidian had shattered those defences and stood on their doorstep.
"I can see dozens of chained guardians," Jester said, using his sword to point into the city.
"Elsin didn't expect us to come," Red said. "There are few soldiers."
"Perhaps," Alidian said. "But stay on your guard. The two of you can't take much more damage, and I can't watch my own back." They nodded, and the trio made their way down to the right. The road split, with two paths descending to the gorge. The city had once had two entrances, but Alidian had destroyed the southern bridge in her escape, and it had yet to be rebuilt, likely for the same reason the city lay empty. They crossed the northern bridge and came to the Aquaglass Gate. Most of the soldiers had fled and regrouped at the wall, and the company of battle mages shifted in fear. Without their army of entities and guardians, they knew they were vulnerable.
"Lower your gate and surrender," Alidian said. "And you shall not be harmed."
They had a whispered conversation, and the captain shook his head.
"I cannot," he growled.
"Your defences have been breached," Jester said, swishing his sword. "Yet you would continue the fight?"
"Your magic is impressive, Oracle Alidian," the man replied. "But we have our orders. To surrender now would leave us open to execution."
"Then join us," Alidian said, "and abandon your empire." The man's expression hardened.
"You think we don't know the state of the war? Our forces will extinguish the vestiges of your army this very night. We would be fools to join you in the last hours of your rebellion."
Alidian exchanged a look with Jester and then inclined her head.
"So be it."
But just as she raised her hands, the captain called out. Glancing behind the wall, he smirked and bowed his head.
"It appears my orders just changed. You are welcome to enter, if you dare."
With that cryptic remark, he signalled his lieutenant, and the woman opened the gate. The aquaglass door lowered into the ground, but Alidian did not advance. Four individuals stood in the shadows of the tunnel, three on their knees.
"Taria," Alidian said, her stomach gripping with fear.
"Alidian," Taria said, "you are clever, but your life has come to its end."
Her voice was distorted, the dark timbre sending a shiver down Alidian's spine. Her skin glowed with a reddish tint, and the shadow to her eyes made Alidian's skin crawl. Red lightning sparked across Taria's flesh, extending to create the shackles that bound Marrow, Raiden, and Devkin.
"What happened to you?" Alidian asked.
Taria's eyes flared as she smirked.
"Do you not recognize it? I discovered how you escaped your cell, but I never imagined the true power of the magic of rage."
Horrified, Alidian stared at Taria. Alidian had used the magic to escape, and only a true friend had helped her end the carnage. But Taria had embraced the power, yielding her will to it, until she was even mightier than Alidian. Taria's eyes glowed with triumph.
"Its voice is like the mightiest of thunder, and drives me to slaughter you all. But I want to relish this moment, the moment you knew death was upon you."
"Taria," Alidian said, "you do not need to harm my friends."
Taria's expression lit up with excitement.
"Oh, but I want to. After all they have done, I yearn to listen to their screams, to watch your face as they perish."
"It's me you want," Alidian said,
"not them."
"I want it all," she said.
She held a hand aloft and marveled at the red lightning sparking across her arm.
"I deserve it all!"
"You have to fight the rage," Elidian said. "You can't let it control you."
"Why?" Taraya asked. "Elsin has killed Maressa, and once you are dead, I will have all the power."
"You know about Maressa?"
"She was weak," Taraya said. "She doubted my plans and deserved her fate. Elsin is ambitious, but I will teach her to follow. If not, I'll kill her."
She smiled, the expression causing all present to shudder.
"First I have you, and I do wish to see you suffer."
She jerked the lightning in her hands, and all three cried out. Marrow whimpered as the red lightning touched her flesh, empowering the anti-magic shackles that bound her wrists. Raiden flinched and looked to Elidian.
"Perhaps we'll start with your beloved," Taraya said with a smile.
"No," Elidian cried.
"I do not deny my love for Raiden, but you'll hurt me more by sparing his life."
"Oh?" she asked, and cocked her head to the side.
"Please tell me the nature of your greatest agony."
"He is not a mage," Elidian said, tears wetting her cheeks.
"We cannot be joined, and can never have a child."
Taraya began to laugh, the sound causing all present to shudder.
"How delicious," she said. "You are right. Leaving him to witness your death will be all the sweeter."
Taraya conjured a spear of red lightning and plunged it into the stone, binding her captives to the earth. Then she glided forward, her entire form sparking with power. Elidian called on the fading light and cast a golem, but Taraya struck it a casual blow, sending the shards into the abyss.
"No!"
Elidian cried, as Jester and Red darted forward. Taraya ducked Jester's swing and cast a sword of red lightning. Then she spun, the blade shattering Red's sword and cutting both paladins in two. But she wasn't satisfied to destroy the armor. She wanted to kill the bearers. Leaping into the air, Taraya caught the paladins at their throats and pulsed her power through the armor's mental link, striking at Jester and Red all the way at Dawnskeep. They screamed in agony. Elidian roared and closed the gap, and punched Taraya with her enchanted arm, the blow smashing into her face. Taraya released the paladins and stumbled back, touching the blood on her lip in surprise. Then her eyes glowed and she reared back, gathering flames about her body.
"Your mother was famous for her phoenix charm," she said. "I think it's only fitting you die by one."
Red lightning turned to fire and molded into flesh and wings, lifting her off the ground as the enormous body took shape. In the fading light, the red phoenix shimmered, bathing the city in red light. Elidian retreated and sought to call her magic, but knew the effort was futile.
"Marrow!" Raiden shouted, desperate as he watched Taraya become a phoenix. "We must help Elidian!"
He struggled against the bonds, but that only made the lightning cut deeper, and blood streaked his arms.
"It hurts," she whimpered.
"I know," Devkin said, his voice somehow calm. "But if she can help us get out, it won't hurt. And I promise you we'll find you some cheese."
"You will?"
Marrow asked, turning tear-streaked eyes to Devkin.
"Yes," Raiden said, struggling to remain calm. "Please?"
"It's filthy magic," Marrow said. "She doesn't want to touch it."
"Then breaking the bonds is like cleaning," Devkin said. "Clean the magic, Marrow."
Marrow's eyes widened and she managed a smile.
"Really?"
"Yes," Raiden said desperately. "Clean the magic."
Marrow winced and nodded, and then a pure white seeped from her skin. Wherever it touched, the red lightning scurried away like a frightened animal, retreating to the spear that held them. Her expression disgusted, Marrow gagged as she pulled free and then reached out to Raiden and Devkin, pulling them free. One of the guards on the wall noticed and shouted a warning, but Raiden was already in motion.
He leapt to the stairs with Devkin, and the two of them charged the Verinai. Most were focused on Tariah's phoenix, and their lack of attention cost them their lives. When the last had fallen, Raiden dropped to the courtyard and sprinted towards the Canyon of Mages. Devkin caught his arm and brought him to a halt.
"You think an anti-magic sword will stop Tariah?" he growled. "We need something more."
"What do you expect me to do?" he snapped. "I don't have Marrow's power." Marrow giggled.
"I can change that."
Raiden turned to growl, and Marrow slapped him. The blow rocked him back, nearly to the ground. He'd been hit by trolls and dwarves, but never did a blow land so hard. Devkin helped him stay on his feet, but his vision swam.
"What was that for?" he demanded.
"I had to get in here somehow," a voice said.
"Marrow?" he demanded, shocked.
"Nope," the voice said. "Just me. I must say your mind is more ordered, but it smells like feet."
"Feet?"
he growled.
"How can a mind smell like feet?"
"Raiden?" Devkin asked uncertainly.
"What are you talking about?"
"She gave me her mind," Raiden said, stabbing a finger at Marrow.
"She gave me her."
"I don't like what you're insinuating," she said with a mental growl. "I thought you wanted help, and Marrow was kind enough to send me over, but no, you have to berate me like I'm a disobedient child, like I'm..."
The voice continued to speak, the words an incessant hum that made Raiden scrunch his face and try to argue. Then he noticed there was a hand on his arm and looked to Marrow. Her face calmer than he'd ever seen, the girl smiled.
"It's hard at first," Marrow said. "But she's young. I find it best to speak to her like a child. A very volatile, erratic, powerful child."
Raiden wanted to argue, to fight the insanity of the situation, but Devkin was right. He needed power. Drawing in a breath, he spoke to her.
"I'm sorry," he said aloud. "I didn't mean to offend."
The voice sniffed.
"Apology accepted. Now do you want to save Illidan? Tariah will tire of her game soon enough. I like Illidan too, you know, and I don't want to see her dead."
"Neither do I,"
Raiden said fervently.
"Then let's fight," she said,
her anger and petulance switching to excitement.
"How do we do that?"
Raiden asked, looking to his sword.
"How should I know?" she asked. "I'm not the soldier."
"Just try something," Marrow advised with a knowing smile. "Then hang on."
"Tariah is in the air," Devkin said. "You might need wings."
"You really think she can give me wings?" Raiden asked dubiously, an image of an eagle flashing through his mind. Enormous eagle wings sprouted from his back, bursting through his armor and spreading wide. He cried out in surprise, but they were already flapping, carrying him into the air. As Marrow and Devkin shrank, she shouted up, laughing.
"Like I said, hang on!"
Chapter 46 Transfer. Toron used the hole in the courtyard to descend while Galathon and Winter raced down the stairs. All arrived in the training hall to find Elsin nearly at the requiems. The rebellion had sent everyone to the city, so the cavern was empty. Light glowed from the requiem spheres, illuminating Elsin's advance.
"Elsin!" Toron shouted.
She rotated and snorted in disbelief.
"What will it require for you to learn defeat?"
"Death!"
Galathon snarled.
"If that is the fate you desire, I will gladly oblige," Elsin said.
The rock troll snorted and started forward, twirling his axe.
"You cannot kill us all."
"I killed Severon," she said, her expression turning malicious.
"Wait!"
Toron shouted, but it was too late. The troll surged forward, crossing the gap with shocking speed. She stomped the floor and the stone cracked all the way to Toron and Winter. Galathon dodged the gaps and reached Elsin. Feinting high right, he swung a full circle, bringing his axe at Elsin's side. She ducked the blow and clenched her fist, bringing a pillar of stone down from the ceiling,
the spike plunging into the floor, narrowly missing Galathon as he spun away. Then she clenched her fist, dropping 7 more pillars, all slamming into the floor. Galathon growled but could not reach Elsin as the pillars closed off his path. Just as Toron and Winter reached the pillars, they began to bend and shift, revealing they weren't spikes, they were legs. The segmented body ripped free of the ceiling, the huge spider snapping its mandibles. Toron skidded to a halt and dived to the side, just missing losing his paladin's head. The huge entity should have required 12 skilled mages to cast, but Elsin had summoned it on her own, and the Amplius glowed with power. Then the spider aimed at Winter and breathed fire, the flames filling the air with smoke and cinders. Winter summoned the moisture from the air into a shield, parting the fire in a burst of steam. Then she cast her own fire, striking at one of the spider's legs, drawing its attention while Toron ducked under the legs. Beneath the giant spider, he swung his sword with all the paladin's strength, slicing the spider legs and making it topple to the floor. But the legs were quick to regrow, and the spider began to rise anew. Winter darted to it, casting a group of fire gremlins that attacked the legs and scaled to the spider's head, their claws digging into the stone. "Go!" Winter shouted. "I'll handle the entity!" Toron hesitated, but Winter sucked the heat from the beast, causing its mandibles to freeze shut. More and more she pulled the heat, using it to conjure more gremlins. The stone turned brittle from the frost, allowing the gremlins to damage the spider's stone flesh. She growled from the strain of using so much magic, but looked to Toron. "Go!" Growling at the choice, Toron turned and raced to Elsin, locked in mortal combat with Galathon. She'd cast a swordsman of her own, a rock troll of pure light. It accepted the mighty blows and landed its own, the blade finding Galathon's flesh. Then Elsin spotted Toron's charge and scowled. The effort required to maintain the entities pushed even the Amplius to the limit, and Elsin's features showed the strain. Then she raised her hands and gathered the wind, churning the air into a wave that rose up between them. Rising all the way to the ceiling, the air gained a disturbing whine as it formed a tidal wave. Then she brought her hands together into a deafening clap, sending the wave of air streaking towards them. Toron stabbed his sword into the ground, but the wind yanked it free and sent him soaring the length of the chamber. He slammed into the far wall just feet from Galathon, while Winter slid to a halt a short distance away. Blood seeped from a wound on her scalp, darkening her white hair. She did not rise. Galathon rose to his feet, blood seeping from 12 wounds. Toron saw the extent of the damage and realized the troll defied death by force of will. Toron attempted to rise, but the paladin's arm would not respond, and he looked down to find it missing below the shoulder. Growling, he teetered as he came to his feet. His vision flickered in and out, the link to the Requiem damaged. Through the haze, he saw Elsin in the midst of the devastated hall. Her spider lay in ruins, the stone burning. The Soldier of Light had been shattered, the limbs torn from its torso. Elsin stood close to the Requiems, her chest heaving.
"You and your petty attempts to stop me," Elsin snarled. "You cannot defy my fate."
She reached up and clenched a fist, and a spike of stone plummeted through a Requiem, the shard killing the occupant and shattering the magic.
"Even the oracles cannot stop me."
She clenched her fist again, and another Requiem went dark. In the raging battle outside the fortress, another paladin collapsed, landing atop a pair of Verinai it had been fighting and crushing them under its bulk.
"You are just insects to me."
Galathon raised his axe and roared. Then he leaned back and hurled it the length of the chamber. Flipping end over end, it streaked for Elsin. She sneered and reached up, intent on catching the hammer with her bare hand.
"You never learn."
A sword plunged into her back, and the shock of the wound caused her to falter. Galathon's axe struck her in the chest, knocking her into the rubble. Across the chamber, Winter stood and released her magic that had held Toron's paladin on its feet. With Winter holding the paladin aloft, Toron had separated from the Requiem and stalked to the distracted Elsin. Reaching her as Galathon hurled his weapon, he'd struck her from behind, allowing Galathon's axe to land its fatal blow. Toron stepped to the dying woman and stooped to her side. "Where's Mal?" he asked, pulling the Amplius and Ocleon free.
"Toron," she said with a grimace, "how could you betray me?"
"You betrayed yourself," he said. "Now where's Mal?"
Her features filled with indecision, so he leaned down.
"Would you have him die because of your pride?"
"He's not always himself," she said, clenching her hand on her wounds. "He disappeared after we returned to the mainland."
"Where would he go?"
Toron demanded. Her eyes fluttered and her voice grew faint.
"I'm sorry, Toron. I thought the Amplius could undo what I had done. Please, heal our son."
Elsin grimaced, and then the light faded from her gaze. Toron watched her die with regret tightening his gut. She'd betrayed him, nearly killed their son, and sought to usurp the kingdoms and the empire. But she'd been his wife at one time. He reached out and closed her eyes before leaving her behind. Alidian was in the fight of her life. Empowered with the magic of rage, Tariah flew with the mighty phoenix charm, unleashing a maelstrom of fire and red lightning. Alidian fled into the canyon of mages, leaping over the remains of entities and wounded Verinai. The surviving Verinai cried out at the sight of Tariah soaring through the canyon, but their hope turned to ashes when the fire rained death upon them. In the dwindling light, Tariah's phoenix reflected bright red, the color shimmering on the walls of the canyon. Like a vengeful demon, she pursued Alidian.
"Your fear is delicious," Tariah called,
her laughter reverberating down the canyon. With a speed charm hastening her steps, Alidian sprinted down the canyon, desperate to escape the carnage in her wake. Fire streaked over her shoulder and formed a wall in her path. She released speed for strength and leapt, casting a shield beneath her feet. The barrier cracked from the heat, but she emerged from the flames.
"Where do you think you will flee?" Tariah called. "There is nowhere for you to go. Nowhere I cannot find you."
"Unleash me, so I can slay her."
Whisper's voice thundered in Alidian's mind, and she fought to resist. Tariah had killed hundreds of wounded Verinai without a thought, and if Alidian gave in to the magic of rage, she would slaughter without remorse. A stone hand flowed out from the wall at her side and reached for her. She turned and punched the rock with her enchanted arm, and the stone hand exploded from the impact. Then she surged into a sprint again and leapt the mangled remains of the steel portcullis. Her heart sank as she realized Boulder Lake lay ahead, and when she left the canyon, she would be in the open. She glanced back, but the canyon was filled with fire.
"I relish your terror," Tariah called, "but my rage yearns to extinguish your life."
Alidian reached the end of the canyon and slid to a halt. Knowing it was futile, she screamed her defiance and called on the stone. The red phoenix shrieked its war cry, the chilling sound a proclamation of death. Then she brought her wings forward, and fire sparked on her wingtips. A green figure leapt from the canyon wall and soared across the bird's back. A sword flashed once, slicing across the phoenix's throat before she plunged into the stone again. Tariah's fire cut off and she shrieked. Spinning, she sought the attacker, but the figure was gone.
"You think a sting will stop me?"
she screamed at Alidian. As Tariah turned again, the figure burst into view a second time, again leaping the canyon, her sword flashing across a wing. The wound spilled liquid flames as the blade cut deep. But this time Tariah turned and caught a glimpse of her attacker.
"Elenir?"
she called, surprise mingling with her anger. Elenir leaned out of the wall, her face appearing just feet from the red phoenix.
"My bird was prettier," she taunted.
Taraya shrieked and blasted the wall, but Elenir had already gone. As stone melted, Elenir dropped from above, slicing Taraya across the eye. Taraya released an unholy shriek as Elenir disappeared into the canyon floor. Elidian took a step towards the conflict, but another figure appeared. With huge wings on his back, the newcomer folded its wings and dropped to Elidian. Then she recognized him and her eyes widened. "Raiden?" she asked, astonished to find him with wings sprouting from his back.
"Maro gave me her other mind," he said,
and then twitched.
"I'll kiss her when I'm ready."
With Elenir and the Red Phoenix dueling in the canyon as a backdrop, she stared at Raiden, fighting the burgeoning emotions. Relief to find him alive gradually hardened into reality. Their future was gone. There was only duty.
"You're in my way," she said, pushing past him.
He caught her arm.
"Elidian," he said. "I don't care what the future holds. I want to be with you."
"How?" she demanded. "I cannot forsake my bloodline, even for the one I love."
"We will find a way," he said, his voice desperate.
"You knew and didn't tell me," she growled. "You knew there was no future."
"I know,"
he said, flinching as fire exploded in the canyon and Taraya screamed anew.
"I feared the distraction."
"Truth is not a distraction," she growled. But it was, and she looked away, unable to rescind the lie. He reached to her and cupped her cheeks in his hands, forcing her to meet his gaze. Despite her anger, he held her bound by the intensity in his eyes.
"I love you," he said softly. "I want to be with you forever. I want your bloodline to continue, for it to be our bloodline. I know that even this can be solved as long as we are together."
"We don't have time for this," she said, attempting to leave.
"My mother wants you to be happy," Raiden said.
"At the price of my lineage?"
"We will find a way so your lineage will continue," he said. "I swear it."
She wanted to argue, but found she couldn't. His blue eyes held her bound, arresting in their certainty and hope. All the fear and doubt melted away, and Whisper's final shout reverberated in her skull. In that instant, she realized that rage had clouded her thoughts since her escape, shackling her hopes, her courage. But rage had no power in the face of hope. She stepped in and kissed Raiden, the bruising contact burning the vestiges of rage's hold. Hope and love surged in its place, filling the breadth of her soul like a burst of light in a shadowed room. She'd escaped her cell months ago, but for the first time she was truly free. He abruptly pulled back and scowled.
"Telling me I'm a good kisser is really awkward, you know that?"
Elidian laughed at the absurdity of the comment, and when the sound faded, she turned to the raging conflict in the Canyon of Mages. Her mother was nowhere in sight, but Taraya had all but devastated the gorge in an effort to tear her asunder. Then a burst of green rose at Elidian's side, and Elenir ascended from the road. Holding a burned arm, Elenir winced.
"I gave you the time I could. It's time to fight, daughter."
"I've never been able to cast the phoenix charm," Elidian said, eyeing the enraged phoenix. "And without the magic of rage, I cannot stop Taraya."
"You don't need rage," Raiden said. "Command the future, and you will survive."
Elidian felt a chill. The magic of rage had empowered her magic, but now she felt a different emotion, a perfect hope. As she marveled at the revelation, a supreme confidence filled her soul, and she sensed the truth. Rage empowered magic. Hope empowered farsight.
"I was a phoenix," Elenir said, her eyes piercing. "But you have always been a dragon. Rise to your power and defeat the true betrayer."
Chapter 47 Hope. Taraya screamed her fury and launched herself at Elidian, lightning filling the canyon. Then Elidian gathered her magic, drawing on the water of the lake, causing it to swell.